Hello and welcome to the MLS podcast. I'm Phil, and with me is my brother Dave.
Hello there.
Today we want to talk about Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi. So I want to start off first by just mentioning when it aired. It was released on May 27th of 2022, which was pretty much earlier this year. And it was released on Disney Plus, just specifically for Disney Plus. One thing that was interesting was that it was originally planned as a spin-off film, but then it was later changed to the limited series, you know, for Disney Plus, mainly because of the commercial failure of the movie Solo, or that's what has been reported. Or if you know, look it up online, that's one of the main reasons. And became...
Yeah, they had to change their game plan, right? They had to regroup.
Yes.
They were probably hoping that it would be well-received. You know, these movies take a lot of money and resources to make, at least the movies. The TV shows, the live-action shows that are coming out now could probably be made with a fraction of that. And they have so many planned that they can't put all their eggs in one basket.
So you would say that it's a little less risky.
Yes. And also the format. So if you go watch a movie... you're expecting people to go pay, and then we already know the pandemic climate also kind of people lost interest to actually go and risk themselves in public places. So the streaming was ideal, an ideal way for not only companies like Disney and other studio people were already doing this. They're already binge watching, quote unquote binge watching. It was a big deal, the big thing. However, this particular show was episodic. And was released weekly a bit. Yeah, weekly.
So because of the fact that it was a streaming service and because of just the long-awaited anticipation, right, for this story, the continuation of the Obi-Wan story, right, it pretty much became the most watched series on Disney Plus for an opening weekend. It broke the record. And, I mean, that's pretty major considering, you know, like Disney Plus has a lot of movies, Marvel shows, a lot of other things that they're releasing. And, you know, the Star Wars brand is still, I guess it's alive and well, right? It's strong.
Well, a big part, I think, has to do with the whole nostalgia factor. These movies, the prequels have been made a while back. Now it's been some time since we revisited some of these lines and characters. And so people were... they're anticipating it because some people actually like the prequels. I mean, they were crazy about the prequels as kids. Personally, in the podcast we mentioned, I enjoyed the prequels. However, they were not perfect, right? And we won't get into that. However, I first to say that I did enjoy The Revenge of the Sith and The Phantom Menace were the ones that I kind of enjoyed. But when I heard about the Obi-Wan series, I was very skeptical. There's other shows that were streaming and The Mandalorian we discussed last time. And that one was actually satisfactory, right? Or it was actually really good to the audiences. They really enjoyed that one to the point where they want to see more and more of it. But the Obi-Wan thing, it was a risk too, because I'm like, okay, I'm used to seeing it in a movie form, the prequel, but not in a live TV form. Live action, that who knows, could be a win or it could be a lose, a flop. So I guess it was right for Disney, Star Wars, Lucasfilm to go this route because we weren't sure how the writing was going to be. And, you know, we're always very skeptical as Star Wars fans because we hold it to a very high standard. I mean, usually we do, but then sometimes we have learned to kind of not expect so much and understand the situation there at Lucasfilm. What do you think?
There's so many factors that go into it. First of all, the story, the writing, and then even the chemistry between the actors and just everything has to be right. A production takes a lot of work, and even for it to make it to actually hit well or just be magical is very rare. It's very rare.
A movie is what, 2 hours, 3 hours?
2 hours. Some maybe
movies,
a little less than
the
two
Star
hours.
Wars movies were about, yeah, they're a little less than 2 hours. But to make a 6 to 10 episode series, you really have to fill in that space. There's a lot of space. There's a lot of time. And would audiences be invested in seeing a whole series of one particular story that we're not sure if it's written in a traditional or even new Star Wars fans would even like. So we're skeptical, but open to watch it. You know, I have my Disney Plus account, and I don't watch everything on there, but I definitely watch the Star Wars stuff, you know, just to give it just to look at it and see what I think about it.
You want to start off? First of all, what was the best thing that you liked about Obi-Wan? Or do you want me to start?
Very beginning, just to start off, the beginning of the prequel, they gave you a recap of the whole prequels, and they did it really nicely. It was like nice and tight. Like, you didn't have to go back and watch the movies. You can just kind of watch the intro, and it catches you up, and then you're like, okay, here we are. This is where Obi-Wan begins. I really like that. Yeah, I really like that. Like, they really, it felt like a TV show, but it was also the movie. So it was really cool. And what did you like for first thing you like about?
Well, the first thing that really stood out to me was, first seeing that kind of like recap or introduction, I'm like, oh, this is, they're going prequel. They really are going prequel style, you know, like, I mean, obviously it's the actors that came out in the prequels, you know, which is Hayden Christensen and Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, it's like an extension of that production, right? The prequel production. And they can, who knows what they can do with it, but people were willing to watch it. And this coming after, I guess you could say, the disappointment, general disappointment by many fans. I mean, a lot of fans enjoyed the sequels, but there was a disappointment. And the movie had just come out. People were like, kind of going like, let's take it back to maybe the prequels and see what, you know, how we feel about that. Maybe they can do something really special and hit out of the park and make us feel that nostalgia and give us some good Star Wars content writing and stuff.
Just the use of like the flashbacks. I mean, they did a little bit with the shows, but not as much as this one. This one, they kind of went like the way, you know, like we always go back to the show Cobra Kai, right? Because Cobra Kai uses the flashbacks from the movies, and they always kind of like use it apart like for the characters to, and you know, to kind of go back and for the viewer to see, oh, that's why they're thinking this way, or this is what they're remembering. And this show was one of the shows from Star Wars that finally kind of like implemented it more than the others, the previous ones. And I think that's what they did very well. And it gives you that nostalgic feeling, you know, but at the same time, it's also moving it forward. I thought that was good.
Well, like we were saying, it was a very, there's a lot of space to fill in. So they were going to have to do more than just your regular movie style techniques. And they did experiment with some stuff. First of all, they had like a shaky cam. If you notice in many of the action scenes or many of the active scenes, they had the shaky cam, and you know, it got a lot of criticism. But me personally, I'm like, can't just tell the story and whatever other techniques that these directors or production people that are involved in the visuals and in the sequences, you have to do something a little bit different. And obviously at first you feel a little uncomfortable, like, does it really fit? And then later you get used to it, you know, after a couple of episodes in, you know. So I did like that they're kind of expanding the way they could tell the story for future projects, because you can't just say, you know, like, upset because they didn't have the, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, or they didn't have the fanfare, or they didn't have the, you know, the things you always saw in the movies. And some people, you know, were protesting, or they were having a fit. But, you know, you can't always do that. You may, and that's cool how they resolved that with just showing the fanfare in the movies and, well, the episodic classic Skywalker saga. But then in the other productions, cartoons and stuff, they kind of went a little different. And here, it resembled, like I said, more of a TV show. And going to your point about showing what's going on in people's heads and all that, yeah, that seems something you would see on TV and television. You get to the mind of the character. The movies never had that much time. You couldn't really explore their heads or what's inside their heads, because there's a lot going on in the movies, in the prequels.
Yeah.
For example, when Qui-Gon was, you know, fighting Darth Maul, and he was meditating there, like, what was going through his head? It was very interesting to see how they fleshed out this episode. I mean, the live action series through every episode. And I mean, what do you think about it? I mean, did you really like it? And then we'll discuss a little bit about the characters and the plot.
Well, I liked it. Overall, I liked it. I thought it was good. I think they really wanted kind of respect the fandom, you know, the people who grew up watching the prequels, like kind of like the ones that watched those as the first movies. I think they're the ones, I guess, kids that were born in the 90s and that generation, I think, really enjoyed it probably more so than,
yeah,
than maybe and like some like us or the older fans that grew up, you know, watching the original Star Wars.
And that was evident too by the reactions that you had, especially towards the end of the last episodes. It was actually a very short series, at least to see this season, and probably mainly because it was a movie, mm-hmm. right? Originally, and then they kind of expanded it, or they added more characters, they added more details and concepts to make it a series. And one of the things that stood out immediately is the addition of the characters. Reva and the Inquisitors were a fresh new way to kind of connect the prequels with the classic trilogy, because we always heard about these Inquisitors that hunted down the Jedi mm-hmm. after, you know, the Order 66, and pretty much the Jedi were done and just being hunted by Vader and his team of Inquisitors.
I like Reva.
Moses Ingram, I think, was the perfect addition to the Star Wars canon, because you really haven't really seen a character like her. And, you know, she had like a very serious, no nonsense kind of, you know, temperament about her. And the thing was that was very tough was that these episodes kind of had like a very slow pace, right? At the very beginning, and then boom, you get off into this roller coaster.
Yeah.
And these episodes really, I guess the characters were fleshed out and they were breathing. And a lot of people were pissed off. They were really critical of the Moses Ingram Reva character. Some of the Inquisitors, the Grand Inquisitor, who, you know, he didn't resemble the Rebels character, the original Inquisitor, head Inquisitor. People are going to nitpick and they're going to be upset if you don't do what they are used to or what they loved about, you know, some of these characters. So
for me, overall, they just weren't as threatening looking or as dangerous as very,
as we once thought. Yeah.
As we once thought. And I think that to me, that really took, that's some of the criticism that I had overall of the show.
That part of the story, which is, you know, the hunting down of the Jedi, I've always pictured as something, man, something really scary and frightening, because, you know, the Jedi's are the guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy. And now here they are being hunted like dogs, you know, and I always pictured it was going to be something a little more brutal, a little more like a movie that, you know, you see people running scared with terror. However, in this show, we have to mention it's a Disney show. So they might kind of approach it a little differently, and they weren't as intimidating as you could say. I mean, don't get me wrong. They look the part, they look great, but something about the writing made them very, toned down that mild fear. Yeah, you were really afraid for them.
We've talked about this before. I mean, we know that Star Wars is going to evolve. You know, the storytelling is going to evolve, and the key or the goal of Lucasfilm, you know, Disney, is to attract more audience, right? New audiences, younger audience members,
and other aspects of the show that people really did not like. You know, I kind of keep up with social media and a lot of reactions about these episodes, is that Reva, you know, going back to the character Reva, kind of, they didn't really give her a backstory immediately. It was just like, here's Reva. And you're kind of left to deal with, okay, like, why is she here? Who is she? Okay, she's an Inquisitor, but why is she an Inquisitor? And you kind of didn't get that information right away. You know, and the same thing with the other ones. You just assumed, okay, they were, you know, they're Inquisitors. And there was something different about her. She didn't seem too evil, like you could say, compared to some of the other ones that, you know, they have a little extra details and things that make them a little, you know, the voice of that other Inquisitor, I don't know, which he also had a lot of, you know, details and makeup and stuff. But like I said, they didn't have an intimidation factor present Don't get me wrong, you didn't want to get caught up in any trouble with them. You know, they had the potential to, you know, take you out, but it had that Disneyfication aspect to them, and that was one thing I didn't like immediately. But I understand they could flesh out the characters, and in the end, you know, everything could pick up, because these shows, they tend to pick up much later in the episodes because they have to stretch out and explain storylines and plots. What did you think about the story overall, the storyline, like the plot points in the story, how it flowed? What did you think?
The story was great. I think they stretched it out, obviously, for a full season. It was just, like I said, those first few episodes that kind of like, what's going on here? Why is like kind of made you ask questions. But after that, once the story got going, Darth Vader and, you know, started hunting down basically Obi-Wan, and there was definitely development, you know, like the overall story arc for Obi-Wan was good. He was a really rusty, non-force wielding character in the beginning, and by the end he was the master that we knew he was, you know, the powerful Jedi.
And it seems like this is how some of these characters have been written, the male characters, and that's been a big criticism. Is I think people wanted to see a slightly more powerful or wiser Obi-Wan from the get-go, and then now it's like, oh, wait a minute, now we're doing this again. Okay, we're gonna revisit this classic male character, and he's going to be a little bit weakened, a little bit confused. And, you know, but for this character, it makes total sense. I mean, he went through some pretty traumatic experiences at the end of the prequels, you know, Revenge of the Sith. So in this case, I guess it's more believable, but it does seem like they suffered a little bit from that. Hey, you know, we're going to give them less powers right now. And maybe establish more female characters, make them seem a little more formidable, a little more important, and they did that, and a lot of people didn't like it. Me, like I said, I gave it a chance, and I understand that there's a lot of episodes that you have to, you know, tell a story with, and it was a little bit kind of didn't have a justification for some of these characters to appear so much right away.
Yeah, it's like they were shoehorned in the show. And you know, it's just, you got to accept it.
Because we mentioned that there was an original Obi-Wan script, right? There was an original movie. Mm-hmm. And it seems like some of this was kind of added to Lucasfilm's Kathleen and their story group, which are very keen on, you know, empowering women and their characters and making sure that they have a vital role in there. Even if some critics think it's a little bit, like you said, maybe like photoshopped in, like an image, like, hey, like, oh wow, wait a minute, that looks totally photoshopped, like it doesn't flow naturally. But they had, it had great potential. All the characters I really enjoyed and I liked. It's just that, yeah, I think that the story suffered a little bit at the beginning. It was kind of jumbled and all over the place. The later episodes really started kicking in when the Tala character came in. She was kind of like a, you know, like an agent, like a spy, in undercover, helping the younglings that were being hunted. And I think once she entered the story, I think it really started moving. And she showed you the little passage, the Jedi, what is it called? Kind of like the Jedi Underground Railroad. And and she was very much involved in that. And she mentions about other Jedi, and she does.
Quinlan Vos.
Yeah, mentions Quinlan Vos and all these other people. You kind of right away understand that she's an important character for that part of the story. And then we get to the later episodes. Well, there's no surprise if you've already seen it. She dies, you know, and she dies in a very dramatic fashion. And it was a really good scene, very powerful scene. They're not perfect movie-like scenes, but I think with the budget, they did a really excellent job. And episode 5 was the sparring session. It was the memory that Vader had of them sparring. I mean, Obi-Wan also probably joined in on this memory that they had sparring. And what they did is they juxtaposed the sparring with what was currently happening in the story. Obi-Wan confronts Reva, and Reva reveals that she was who? She was a youngling at the during Order 66. Yeah, and that was a very important thing, because you know, Order 66 was pretty much the murdering and killing of everybody in the Jedi Order that was present there, and everybody else fled. And it was at the behest of Anakin, you know, well, obviously the Emperor gave the order, but, and they showed you some pretty powerful flashbacks. And then now you understand, okay, Reva is a Jedi and that, or a Jedi in training, and that she was pretty much left to die, but she survived it. So she has some kind of like survivor's guilt, or she has this vendetta against the Jedi and
Darth Vader.
And the Darth Vader. Yeah. Later you learn that she was really an inquisitor to get close to Vader so she could, you know, have revenge or to avenge her friends that were killed, you know, mercilessly by Vader, the Anakin character, the Anakin Vader, not the, you know, robotic machine, suit Vader. And that was very powerful. I thought they did really well in those lines. They were very haunting. And she said, hey, like, would you kill Vader? Would you kill Anakin? And it shows that Obi-Wan was actually very conflicted, about the whole thing. And you know, a lot of criticisms like, why didn't you just kill him? Or why he's going to be the grand villain. Like, you guys remember, you have to remember, this is just a story. And also, you can't rewrite canon. The original trilogy is kind of like it's like the Bible, you know, it's like, you can't rewrite that. So you have to get there. And it's just funny how a lot of people have their input is almost like rewriting certain parts that you just can't rewrite. And I guess the only thing you're left to do is to really piece it well, you know, weave it together. And I think episode 5 and 6 did that very well. So Reva ends up fighting Darth Vader. And, you know, she shows a lot of prowess. She has a lot of skills. You know, she's an inquisitor, and she was a Jedi in training. So she's going to have something. But obviously everyone knew, as you watch any reaction, that, you know, she was not going to do very well against Darth Vader. Did you like that sequence? Did you like that?
Yeah, it was good. It just, the ending of it, it just kind of didn't, it was a little puzzling. Like the Darth Vader, I guess, that we always thought was ruthless, and he would just murder them. But for some reason, she just led her to rot there. I don't know, that to me, that kind of story-wise, I didn't really, it didn't, okay, so she lives now.
I understand. Okay, so she survived in the Jedi Order as a young girl. I mean, maybe she was very powerful and enough to survive. They didn't really hurt her that much. Well, it was revealed that Vader said, you did not, she knew that it was her. He revealed to her when he shanked her with the lightsaber for the second time, told her, yeah, like, I don't need you anymore. But it's interesting how he just kind of poked her in the same spot and then just left her there. Like, yeah, you could survive or not. Maybe there's something deeper. Maybe Vader could see the future and say, hey, something's going to happen with her in the future. I know. I mean, I'm speculating, story-wise, it was probably not the best thing.
Yeah, and it was
But you have to understand that Reva is a cool character. A lot of people resonated with her, and that to keep her around, you had to find a way to have her survive. And she obviously, by the end of the series, she survives, you know. Yeah. She's not quite, you know, composed, but she survives. And in episode 6, she has a big role.
I guess I would have probably just had her escape somehow, or maybe have something urgent happening to Darth Vader where he has to leave, you know, or something, as opposed to just letting her, after all the betrayal she did and everything, and they just to still let her live. Like, I don't know, it just didn't make sense. And she was still like.
Then this is the part. It's the part where a lot of people point fingers. They point fingers at the story group, you know. And one thing to mention, and we never mentioned, is that the story group, well, first of all, Kathleen is in charge, right? Kathleen Kennedy is the boss of Lucasfilm, and she runs it really tight. And she runs it, may I say, some critics call her kind of like a Vader-ish kind of character. And let me explain. They say that she kind of, you know, she's like the chosen one, chosen by Lucas to run that, you know, he tapped that's his wish, you know. So in a sense, like, it's like she's meant to be that person, that she's the chosen one. However, some people criticize her as being very aggressive, and this is exemplified through her firing of many writers, directors, people who don't quite see eye to eye with her or do kind of her quote-unquote bidding. So that is a very interesting comparison And also, we have to look at the story group. I think the story group consists of six women and two men. One of those men being Pablo Hidalgo, who has been there, I guess, for some time, who kind of makes sure that if they want to write something about Star Wars, that it's not too extreme, where it's like, wait a minute, you can't write that because this happened, you know, it goes against canon, or it goes against what this was, other writings don't allow it to be used. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm sure he's pressured to think that if I don't kind of go with, you know, Kathleen's kind of point of view of, then maybe they'd fire him too. But I think that that's very apparent in the writing, is that women are in control of this. And I don't think they write all the material, but they are definitely guides, and they're definitely kind of like overseers, or, mm-hmm. you know, they're like gatekeepers. Like, it has to go through them. And I think that a lot of the new Star Wars content, especially the stuff that's influenced by them, it shows that there is definitely a female's perspective. And, you know, like I said, I don't have anything wrong with that.
Yeah, that it doesn't jeopardize the storytelling. Yeah.
Right. And how much do you really want these characters?
As long as it's well written.
Yeah. How much are you willing to change? And how much are you willing to piss off people? Because you already know some fanboys, they're not going to have any of it. They want it the way they remember it. And having all these female characters, and the, you know, not the good writing techniques, but the mm-hmm. the ones that are criticized, like that doesn't make sense. Why does she have so much power? You know, the race arc, the story. Now they're talking about Reva, and then who else is another character? Oh, Leia. Some people were complaining how they brought Leia back. Mm. That it should have been Luke only, and that Leia and never had an interaction with Obi-Wan. But, you know, based because of the story group, the way the way Lucasfilm is structured,
I agree.
Under Kathleen and that story group, that you're going to have those stories told, even if they don't really make so much sense to the current story.
I don't know. Will they have a season two of Obi-Wan?
They probably will, because, you know, they want to make money, and people are going to reactors, people who watch these. And even if they like it or not, it's content to even for them to create their own content. But the show was all over the place. You know, it was a little weird. The pacing at the beginning, some of the action shots, some of the sequences. For example, the young Leia sequence. Remember when she was being chased by Flea and his mm-hmm. gang of tubs? A lot of people would prefer to see maybe like a battle, like a spaceship battle. And this takes place in Alderaan, right? With the character Jimmy Smits. I don't know the actress's name, but the one that plays his wife, and they're the adopted parents of Leia. And this sequence was really like subpar, but at the same time, I understand the budget constraints, and maybe they wanted kids, very young kids, to understand this scene. And when a little girl's running away, maybe you don't want to over sensationalize it and make certain kids understand the severity of it, and have her kind of, I don't know, show her running. It was a little puzzling, but and also I want to discuss the last episode. So the last episode, the lightsaber duel between Obi-Wan and Luke Skywalker was very, very intense. I don't know if you remember the plot, but basically Obi-Wan's being chased, him and the other the Force sensitive people, or the formation, the rebellion, I guess you could mm-hmm. say, at that time was being chased by Vader and his one of the Inquisitors by one Star Destroyer. And what Obi-Wan does is he leaves them, and then he basically knows that Vader's gonna chase him alone, because Vader has a vendetta with him. You know, he Vader left them in pretty much left for dead in the Revenge of the Sith on Mustafar. Mm-hmm. Obi-Wan bests him. So he lures him to this planet. And in this planet, they fight again. You know, this is the second fight of the season. They had an earlier one where they'll fire the big fire and Talos saves them.
One-sided. Totally one-sided.
Yeah. He gets beat up pretty bad. And then people even question, like, what is this? Why did they have that first first battle? And now it's apparent that, you know, they need to, like I said, they need to fill in the gaps. They need to extend this a series. And I think also they want to establish the character as Tala, as someone that's he needed, because in the end, she's the one that saves him.
Sacrifices herself.
Yeah, the female character came to the rescue. Is probably something that the story group and Kathleen want to really emphasize for, you know, I guess the new generation. And it was fine, you know, but like I said, going now to the later episodes, the 5, 6, it really picks up. And this battle between Vader and Obi-Wan was really epic. And you saw Force abilities that you've never seen before. This got criticism, but overall people liked it. You know, the guys liked it, like, wow, when he basically lifts up rocks, you know how, and Dagobah, that's what they were training to do. Luke was training with Yoda, and Yoda basically lift up rocks, or training Luke to lift up rocks. And then now this is the payoff. Like, look, not only can you lift up rocks, you could use these rocks and throw them. Also in the sequel trilogy with Rey, she lifts up the rocks at the end, if you remember, of the last, was it the Last Jedi? And she helps him basically escape. So it kind of rhymes that. And so it was very interesting. But either way, he kicks Vader's butt. You know, if you remember, he beats him up pretty bad. He destroys his controls, and he cuts off the mask, right? Half of the mask or part of the mask. And in the in the Rebels cartoon, the character Ahsoka, she did the same thing, but on a different side, on the other eye.
And that's exactly what I thought when that happened, where Obi-Wan cracked some of that mask, Vader's mask, off. I thought of that cartoon, that show Rebels, and the similarities between that.
And I think that was very good of them to use that. But for your general general viewer, of someone that's just kind of tapped into Star Wars, it was a very powerful moment. And even if you were a fan of that Rebels scene with Ahsoka, this was live action, and you're going to get to see Hayden Christensen, at least, you know, a deformed, or, you know,
or flashback machine. Or flashback Anakin.
Yeah. But I'm talking about the final fight, the final battle between them. You saw him, and that moment was really eerie and really powerful. The way they blended in James Earl Jones's voice and Anakin's voice, meaning Hayden Christensen, it just perfectly blended, almost like two trilogies. Very important about this sequence, or this part, is that now, even though Obi-Wan kicked his butt, Obi-Wan has some kind of redemption. He always felt guilty for failing Anakin. He says, "I failed you, Anakin," and Revenge of the Sith. And in this one, he's like, "I'm sorry." He apologizes, and he really let it go. Like, he started crying. You know, I know Jedi's, I guess, are not supposed to cry, but here he broke down because, you know, he finally saw him with his own eyes. Like, he saw Anakin under that mask. And that's, come on, how are you going to forget your friend, your buddy, your brother in the Jedi, you know, that you were tasked, or that you were responsible to train because of your dying master's wishes? You know, it's really deep, you know, and that's
but, sweet. But the result was Anakin confessing, Vader confessing, no, it was not your fault. I turned. Like, that's kind of the confirmation, too, that I got from this show, and this, especially that episode, that it wasn't all your fault. Like, no, I chose this path. So
you have to remember in Revenge of the Sith that Obi-Wan, he walked away. I guess he might have thought, I finished him already, because he cut off his limbs. He had the higher ground, remember? He chopped off his limbs, and he was just
gonna die.
He was basically just rolling in fire, or there in the hot molten, well, near it. He wasn't, and he caught fire. And so I guess he figured he was gone, you know, and he didn't know until this series that he was actually alive. And now he was Vader, which was really, that's a really important reveal. I don't know how well they did that sequences in episode 5 and 6, you know, the Reva fight with Vader, and then the Anakin fight with Obi-Wan was kind of worth it. It was what people wanted, and they got. And obviously, as a whole show, didn't get a very good grade. You know, and like I said, I wouldn't give it a good grade. What would you give it as a whole show?
I would give it a 7. Like I said, I just feel like it was a series that seemed a little stretched out at times, but there was a story to tell. One of the things that I think maybe bothered a lot of people, it didn't necessarily bother me, but when it came to young Princess Leia, and then tying it to the actual original movie, where she mentioned that maybe she knew Obi-Wan or Ben Kenobi, but not necessarily Obi-Wan. So they were really teetering on the line there, right? They were really in regards to like, hey, has she met him before, or did she just know about him? And then in this show, clearly, oh, she obviously knows him. She's not only knows him, she went on an adventure with him. They were on an adventure together.
They were together for some time.
So they're kind of rewriting it and stepping on the line a little bit, right? As far as like what the canon was in the past.
Yeah. We understood.
Yes.
But there was a big gap and a lot of things could have happened. And I don't know if that was Lucas's original story treatment for that. However, we mentioned how Kathleen and the story group really want to emphasize females, get females to watch this. And like I said, the negative criticism, she's like Vader for women. And she was willing to kind of twist the story a little bit to cater to the female audience. And, you know, like I said, I had no problem with that. I think they stretched it, but that Leia character, you know, the actor, I don't know her name, the young actress. Yeah. I think she knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, she did.
And the dialogue between her and not in the early episodes, in the later episodes when she has that departure moment with Obi-Wan was extremely powerful.
Yeah, they had chemistry.
Yes, they had really good chemistry. She was kind of like a young Carrie Fisher, you know, I mean, obviously they're very different, but the characters were consistent. You know, she was very, you know, sassy and very, you know,
very witty, very witty and confident.
And she was very self-determined. You know, she knew what she wanted to do, and they demonstrated that very, I think, successfully.
Yeah.
And I had no issue with Leia at all. And then Leia is a core character to Star Wars. She was like the first protagonist really introduced in the A New Hope, the theatrical New Hope, not the cut, because there's a lot of deleted scenes that actually had Luke and some of his friends. But she was one of the pieces, the important pieces of this whole story. No one will deny that she belongs there. It's every other character that created after that, you know, which, you know, you could, some people like these characters and dislike these characters, whatever. But Leia's, you cannot deny her importance in it. And I think they did a really good job. I was really impressed with her. I'm like, she was kind of like the star for me in this show. I mean, obviously I love Hayden. I love Ewan McGregor, but you knew they were going to be good. And,
yeah.
and you just worried about the story a little bit. And how the writing and how much the story group can really piss people off. You know, that was my concern.
I think that was one of the main criticisms of this actual season of the show is just the writing overall. Like there was some, I don't want to say that they're just plot holes, but just things like you have Reva doing the tricks or the parkour.
Yeah, that particular sequence.
And the ending of episode one, right, I believe.
It's just that we really didn't know who she was yet.
Yeah.
We really didn't know who she was. And remember, these live-action shows, it seems like they're putting more of the money into the later mini-movie episodes, which, you know, live-action Star Wars.
Yeah, or even the duels.
Yeah, or whatever it needs it.
Yeah.
And so you could tell that some of these early episodes were very low-budget. Like I said, the Leia chasing with Flea, you know, from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and all that. It seems like there wasn't too much, you know, action. It was very limited. Like I said, I didn't mind it at work if it worked as a unit. Like it didn't contradict itself. And like I said, it was all over the place. Probably went through a lot of rewrites to satisfy the Kathleen and the story group's vision of what they feel this should accomplish for them, since they're the ones that are kind of in charge of that department of story. And it's just very interesting how this has kind of been a trend, don't you think? A lot of disappointment of people and the story, starting with the sequels,
overall, like we've talked about before, that we prefer to have any Star Wars over no Star Wars. So you're going to take what you can with this. And like I told you, I give it a maybe 6-7.
As a series, I gave it a 7. Like it made the 7 because the 5 and 6 just. I mean, I know you could criticize the first 4 or 5 episodes, and then I mean the first 4, and then the last 2 were amazing Star Wars content. I think this was like the most amazing type Star Wars things that we've always wanted to see that yeah. we quite didn't see for a while. But the episode 5 and 6, I give them like 8 and 9 maybe, because it just, it was emotionally heavy. It was a very, very deep, it got me. Okay. So when Vader was fighting Obi-Wan on that planet, Vader got his butt kicked. And as soon as it was apparent that, oh my God, he's going to get his butt kicked. Like, dude, it's not going to be Ty. It's not going to be what people think, like, oh, the bygones people, or one of them runs away, or no, like Vader is going to get his butt kicked, and he's going to repeat Revenge of the Sith. Like, he's going to be helpless. And as soon as you saw him yell, like when he kind of swung the lightsaber on his back, and then the music, the intensity of the music, it made me emotional. I was like, it almost felt like a bully, like your bully that you've always known when you were a kid. He was getting beat up, and I don't know how to, I didn't know how to react, but just become emotional. I mean, I wanted Obi-Wan to obviously to win. You know, he's the good guy. It's Anakin that did all the, I mean, to see him helpless, it was like, it was almost like I was saying goodbye to my childhood in a way, like, oh, like the bully of my childhood is just, that's it. Like, he's powerless, you know? And then obviously the scene where you see his eyes and, you know, and Obi-Wan's really emotional. Obviously that was a really emotional part. And then the another emotional part was the Leia scene where she's talking to Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan tells her, you're like wise and discerning and kind-hearted like your mother.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Fearless and forthright like your father. I'm like, it tied it perfectly. And it was about, you know, if you're a parent, there's a lot of parents out there that they really love that part, because, you know, they know their kids. They see them grow up as babies and grow up, and you're like, hey, you're like your mom, or you're like your dad, you know, when you do that, or make that face, or you laugh like them, or you know, you're very temperamental, or whatever the case may be. And that was a really amazing part. I'm like, man, why don't they do more of that? This is a very deeply psychological story. You know, going back to Return of the Jedi, you know, when he was confronting Vader, and you know, you have a twin sister, and like getting in his head, and it was a very powerful moment. So, like I said, those last episodes, they, like everyone, it's a consensus, they really loved them. It was like, you got the prequels, you got like a bits of Empire, you got Return of the Jedi, you got whatever, it was there. You got a little bit of the cartoons, and it just made it all worth it.
Well, to wrap it up, what would you like to see if there was a Obi-Wan season 2? I will start off by saying that I do not want to see them face each other actually anymore. It could be where now they're both on doing their own thing. Maybe Darth Vader is in his Star Destroyer, or you know, or some sort of big ship, or his doing things from the command center, you know. And the same with Obi-Wan, going, maybe he's doing missions now, or he's somewhere where he don't necessarily have to face Vader. I think that for me, as long as they don't do that again,
you're saying like
they won't mess with the canon. Yeah,
if they start doing the empire building part of, possibly, which is this is the part where it happens. So he's basically, Sidious told him, I don't know if you guys remember the story, Sidious told him that don't focus on Obi-Wan. He makes you weak. You know, like you're getting too emotional. Like, hey, focus. I'm your master now. And I thought that was great too. So yeah, I don't expect them to meet again. That's it. That was the last meeting, and it ties the trilogies together. And then also, we forgot to mention that Qui-Gon appears at the very end.
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
He was talking to him, and he never appeared. He never appeared, and he finally appeared. And a lot of people wanted him to appear though during the fight when he was under the rubble, but instead it was kind of the motivation for him to escape was the kids, you know, the Leia and Luke, which I thought was perfect, was fine. But a lot of people had a problem with it. They wanted, no, Qui-Gon should have been the one that told him, you could do it, or whatever, get out of there, or
use the Force, or Obi-Wan,
or even don't kill Anakin. You know, hey, he's the chosen one. Like, a voice stops him. But no, I thought it was great that it was Obi-Wan that proves his compassion, and that aligns him to the Force. You know, it aligns him to the, you know, where he needs to be able to see his master, and which I think is more of a metaphor. The Force Ghost is a metaphor of your master's wisdom. They're gone, but that wisdom stays with you, and you apply it. You know, you learned what they taught you, And that was, I think, really cool. And also it rhymes Luke. Remember episode 7 of the sequel? Same here. Like, hey, you talk about your Qui-Gon. Where's Qui-Gon? Hey. And then he appears at the end. So it kind of rhymes that. And I think it's a pretty good move for Disney. So do you expect to see Qui-Gon in this next episode?
I mean, series? I believe you. Yeah, they would probably have him like appear occasionally.
A lot or no?
No, just a little. Yeah. Maybe a couple times.
And it's not necessary. Yeah, it's not necessary to have him in the whole thing. You're right. And this time, there's so many possibilities they could do with Obi-Wan. Obviously, he can't be traveling the whole galaxy anymore. And you'll have it kind of like a split story where it's Obi-Wan's story and then Vader's story. And they'll probably have Reva survived. So because it's consistent with the season one, the Reva character, I'm sure they're going to show her.
She would be an ally. Yeah.
Or who knows? Maybe they won't. Either way, Reva has potential to have her own prequel, and also a pretty interesting story, you know, to watch. And so I'm really happy with where Star Wars is at as far as the Obi-Wan angle arc and the trilogies being nicely weaved together. I thought that was excellent. Even the Emperor appearing like the Return of the Jedi Emperor. I know some people didn't like that. Like, who's that? Like it's the classic trilogy. Are you kidding me? Like, you guys need to go back and watch the trilogy, the original one. I think a lot of people spend too much time on watching don't get me wrong, they're great. But some of it is really like just over-sensationalized fan service. You know, some of the Jedi fighting, and it's like, nah, they wouldn't show that in real life action. Mm-hmm. Like even in the movies, Luke didn't do that, or even in the prequels, you didn't see that kind of fighting. So they're getting a little too comfortable with the cartoons. Don't get me wrong, the cartoons are amazing and they hold their own place in people's hearts, you know, and I enjoyed them. But they need to go back and watch the trilogy and see, hey, are they really connecting to that? And I think the answer is yes. It was a struggle, but they got it done with this series. And hopefully, I would love to see a season 2.
Well, we'll end it there. Thanks for listening. And we will be back for another episode talking about something else. So,
Force will be with you always.